Valspar Ultra starts at just $29.98 a gallon. So we've got you covered when your daughter wants to paint her room again after last year's masterpiece of a unicorn mural.
Dad, please.
Or when you realize that maybe you went too hard on the greige.
I miss color.
Or when you were sure you wanted a home gym, but your elliptical is currently hanging your laundry.
What about a home office?
Shop everything you need for your next phase with Valspar. Available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
Hillbilly Horror Stories presents Classic Listener Stories.
Hey guys, and welcome to April's Listener Story bonus episode.
Hey guys.
We have four really good stories for you tonight. Usually we have a few more than that, but we had a couple of cancellations. But the ones that we do have more than make up quality over quantity in this case.
And you really emphasize but.
Well, I had to.
Oh.
Because I like big butts.
And I cannot lie. I came on at work today, by the way, and it was really, I thought it was pretty funny, and I enjoyed that song, except we had some elderly people in there, and they weren't having it.
Well, on Justin Rimmel's MC Nation page, his group, he always does, like, what music are you listening to on
mm-hmm,
Friday?
Mm-hmm.
And I put on Biz Markie's Just a Friend.
Oh, my gosh.
And then somebody put on there afterwards. They're like, no, I'm going around rapping this all day at work.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny. And I only put it on there for the purpose of just trying to get it stuck in somebody's head.
Oh, way to go. That's awesome.
Because the last time, I think last Friday, I put the Brady Bunch's Sunshine Day as the song I was rocking out.
I know. And Eminem came on, too. And Brianna was like, do you know if this is a censored channel? And I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't know. And as soon as I got back to switch the radio station, Hillary said, nope, just heard it. Just heard the F-bomb. And I was like, oh my gosh. So I had to go change that channel. So.
Well, I mean, you work at a dentist. I'm sure they're used to hearing the F-bomb probably seven times during their...
I know, it is funny. I mean, you know, whatever. It's Friday. You've got to party up, right?
That's right. Party. It's Easter. It was Good Friday.
And it was. Oh, we should be dropping the F-bomb on the Good Friday.
Yeah.
That's terrible. Well, anyway, so go ahead.
Okay. So, I don't even know where to start on this one. I've sat there and looked at all four stories, and usually I have some idea of some are just a little bit better, and I try to end on the best, and I really don't know where to go on this one, because I thought all four stories were really good.
Mm-hmm.
So, what I've decided to do was I wanted to start with a good friend of ours, Kate.
Okay.
Who lives out in Arizona, and she's got all kinds of stories, but she used to be a corrections officer,
mm-hmm.
so she shared some stories that involved her times in corrections.
Yes, they're very good and very scary.
So that's the one we're going to start off with, and she said some very nice things to us about her children. Listen, it's funny, because I've been trying to get her to tell her story for literally 6 months, and she couldn't do it. Because she was still a corrections officer, so she didn't want to talk about it. But now she's not. But her daughter is like, I think she's like 13 years old. And she's hooked on the show. And what?
Nothing. I'm just waiting for you to puke.
You know we can't do these things right after I eat a full meal.
Gosh.
But
go ahead.
Her daughter's hooked on the show. And she just thought it was awesome that we were going to have her on the show. But Kate kept turning us down. So I kept trying to use her daughter as a pawn and kept saying, yep, your daughter would really like this. Think of how your daughter would look at you if you were on the show. And So I thought it was funny. But then she also, right after she got off the phone with us the next day, because we FaceTimed for a little bit, so she, you know, we did a little video chat. And the next day she sent us a message to say that her youngest daughter, who wasn't awake, I don't think, at the time, she told her that she got to FaceTime us, and she said that her daughter just kind of, her face just lit up and she was so excited about it. And then one of the nicest things that anybody's ever said, she said her daughter doesn't know any celebrities, but she knows Jerry and Tracy. So I thought that was adorable.
That's the sweetest thing. Thank you, sweetheart.
Let's listen to Kate. Hey guys, I've got a longtime friend of mine, Kate from Arizona, on the phone, and we've got a couple of stories that she's going to tell, but she's been a member of law enforcement So she's going to be on an upcoming law enforcement episode where she's going to discuss some of her stories. But she had a couple of extras, and we thought we would have her share those tonight. Kate, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. We've had a lot of fun talking about some of your experiences as a correctional officer, and you were still in the field and couldn't discuss those stories at the time, but you've since left that profession, and that opens up a chance to talk about some of those, and we are going to talk about some of those. But we did a show a little while back on Tombstone, which you are a big fan of, the Tombstone area, and you told me you had a story, so I thought we would start with that. You have an encounter at the Birdcage Theater, correct?
Yes, this was actually a few years ago. My best friend flew out, and we decided to go on a road trip. So we started in Tombstone and decided to stay the night there. So at the Birdcage Theater, they do a night tour, and you have to be 18 and up to do this night tour because it's very active at night. So we did that, and she had never been. I had been previously, but I never had an experience like what I had with her that night. She's from the East Coast, so she was kind of doing her own thing, buying souvenirs. I wasn't really paying attention as we toured the Birdcage Theater. And at the end of the tour, they do a session where they call it lights out. So literally they shut the whole building down. It's pitch black. And they set up it depends on what session you're doing, but they set up different things like a spirit box, which I think flips through the radio waves and picks up what the spirits are saying to you. And they also do other machines in there as well. So we did the whole tour. My friend didn't mention buying anything to me. I wasn't paying attention. Sitting there around the table with probably, I think there was about 15 people in that group that night. And it wasn't active at first, but then things started lighting up and things started coming through the spirit box. And someone says, "What's standing behind you?" Kind of directed at me. And I felt something standing behind me, but my hair was standing on end. And what it was is the area that I was sitting in, there was an exit sign all the way across the Birdcage Theater. It's a red, you know, they have to have those lit up per fire code. So those are the only things they couldn't shut off. And it was just enough light to put, you know, where people could see behind me, basically. So I could feel something standing there, and I was freezing. And I said, you know, I do feel like something is standing behind me. Now, I had turned on my phone just to record audio during this time. And my best friend is sitting right next to me. So the woman that was leading the tour starts asking questions. And as she went through the questions with the spirit started responding through the spirit box. He said his name was Rhett. And she asked if he liked me. And he said, "Love." And then my name is actually a very unique name. And he said that also came through the spirit box. Whoa. So I was really on edge. And it actually came out that my friend had bought a brothel token, which is what they used back when the Birdcage was up and running. And it's basically what the customers would pay the girls with. And she bought a replica of it, and she had it in her pocket. I didn't know that. So she was kind of upset that she didn't get, I guess, maybe a little bit of attention for having the token in her pocket. But he was definitely right behind both of us, but he said my name on the spirit box. So it was like really, it was cool, but it was kind of creepy at the same time. Now, we ended up leaving the next day to California. We were continuing on our road trip. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with the area between Tombstone and California. It's called I-8. And between Arizona and California on I-8, there's literally nothing out there. Absolutely nothing. Once you get past Casa Grande, it's just open desert. you hope to find a gas station if you need it, because it's just nothingness. We were out in the middle of nowhere, and we're talking, and I said, do you smell that? And she said, yeah, I do smell that. And I said, you know, what does it smell like to you? And she said, it smells like leather. And it was the strongest leather scent I have ever smelled in my life. It smelled like someone had just made a fresh saddle and threw it in the back seat of my car. And there's absolutely nothing in that area that could have, you know, there's no factories, there's nothing. And it stayed in the car for about 5 minutes, and then it just went away. So I kind of thought that was interesting that happened to us when we left. But that's my story about Tombstone. I have many other stories about Tombstone, but that was the one that was, other people had heard it too. They heard this same thing happening through the spirit box. So it was pretty cool.
I like how you're an expert on saddle smells.
Well, you would imagine a saddle would smell really strong. I would hope it wouldn't smell like anything else.
I mean, it could have been a coat, a leather coat, or leather seats in the car, but you chose a saddle.
Well, you know, we were in character, okay? We wore fuzzy mustaches while we walked around Tombstone. We were cowgirls with mustaches. Come on.
Well, that's crazy, though. My gosh. And you said it stayed with you the whole trip.
What was that?
You said that smell stayed with you the whole trip.
No, it was only for about 5 minutes. It was extremely strong.
Oh, wow.
In the car. But like I said, there was nothing. There was nothing around. Like, there's no way anything could have made that smell.
Wow, that is so crazy.
We have conversations like that on our road trip, too, but it usually isn't the smell of leather.
It is not.
I can only imagine, Jerry.
Yeah, she's blamed a whole refinery on me before.
Yeah. And then he locks the car window, so that I can't get the car window down. So, yeah, it's great. Good times.
Oh, and he locks it too, huh?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Such a gentleman.
I know, he is. He's a stinker.
Look, y'all are getting off topic. So, you have been a correction officer for like the last 10, 12 years, something like that?
Yeah.
And you've had the, I guess we'll say, privilege, for lack of a better word, to work in some regular prisons, but also on some reservations, which I find completely fascinating, and I'm sure everybody else will too, but they'll have to hold off to the other show because we're not talking about those tonight. I just thought I'd tease people for no reason whatsoever. You have a really cool story, though, from a state penitentiary you worked at that has a little bit of history behind it. And that's the story that I chose for you to tell tonight. So you want to tell us about a female execution?
Sure. Back in 1930, the last person hanged in the state of Arizona executed by hanging was Eva Dugan. And if anybody's interested, they can look up her history, her crime. But she went to the gallows defiant. She showed absolutely no remorse for her crime. She was pretty angry, had the attitude of, let's get on with it. So she was housed in cell block 4 at the state penitentiary. And that is a huge building. It's about 5 stories, including a basement area. The whole time that I worked there, and I did work at night, so I experienced a lot more activity than people that worked on day shift, but everybody, every single person that I ever worked with agreed that there was something really bad wrong with that building. Every time I went to do a walk in the basement, I could not get through there fast enough. I felt like I wanted to run through, and it was especially bad in the back corner of the basement. There was also an inmate that would hang up a sheet in front of his cell front. And when I'm talking about these prisons, I want you guys to imagine a prison from the 1930s, that has steel open bars. These are not new buildings. These are very old. They're literally crumbling. They're very hot buildings. So this inmate would hang a sheet up, and I hated that area. I wanted to get through there as fast as possible. But for whatever reason, one night I stopped and asked this inmate, and he was an elderly man. I said, why do you hang that sheet up in your cell front, and why do you wrap your head up so tight every night? And he said, because I'm tired of that lady standing in front of my cell screaming. Which really like stopped me dead in my tracks. And I said, who are you talking about? And because I was the only female working that building. And obviously I'm not the one standing in front of his cell screaming. And he said, the lady. And I said, are you talking about me or are you talking about somebody else? And he said, no, CO, it's not you. He said, she's not dressed like you. And I said, well, you know, what is she wearing? And he described like an old dress attire. And I'm sitting there racking my brain trying to figure out who's in my building, who's walking my building. And he said, no, this has been going on for a long time. I don't like her. I don't like when she stands in front of my cell. So I wrap my head up so I don't have to hear or see her. So that kind of freaked me out. So I, you know, went ahead and sped through the rest of my walk because I'm terrified to be down there in that basement. So one night I had we called him newbies. He was, you know, fresh out of the academy, but he was from the army. So he's new. We did our walks. We sat down. It was extremely hot that night, so that we had these big fans blowing. And the fans that we're using are extremely loud, but I'm sitting there in my chair. He's sitting there in his chair. We're not talking. I don't really know this person. And I could hear somebody whispering to me in my ear. There's no one around me. I'm looking at him. He's not whispering to me. And I could hear somebody, and I couldn't make out the words, but somebody was whispering. And I didn't want to say anything because I didn't want to scare this new officer and, you know, make him bolt out the door like most people do. But he kind of started looking at me funny, and I looked back at him, and he's the one that brought it up. He said, do you hear that? And I said, yeah, I hear something. What do you hear? He said, it sounds like somebody's whispering in my ear, but I don't know what they're saying. I was like, oh, okay, yeah. That's happening to me too. And then we smelled campfire smoke, like really strong. And at that point, I'm thinking the inmates are, you know, they're smoking cigarettes in the building. They're burning something. There's a fire somewhere. Let's go do a walk. So I said, let's go check this out. He smelled it too, walking the building together. Normally we would split up and I would walk half the building and he would walk the other half of the building since it's such a large building to walk. Well, this time we're like, let's walk the building together because of all these weird things going on. I definitely didn't want to be by myself. And all of a sudden the smell was gone. And there is absolutely no way that a smell that strong could be there 1 minute and then gone the next minute. So I don't know if it had to do with Eva Dugan, you know, trying to curse the building still, or, you know, if she's still playing her games in there, but that building is terrifying. And it's also sits directly next to the death house where they still do the current executions. The gallows that she was hung on were right next to that building as well. Her hanging is actually what changed Arizona. They started doing gas chamber after that because they botched her hanging so bad that apparently she was kind of a heavier woman and they didn't account for that. When they hung her, her head popped off and rolled through the crowd because back then it was a public execution. It was so horrific that three men fainted two women fainted when she was executed. It was like a horror movie. Her head popped off and just rolled towards the audience and was like spurting blood everywhere. So I have no doubt she's probably still pretty furious about the way she went.
I guess not.
So, no one likes working that building.
Oh my gosh. I just totally envisioned that whole head rolling toward people.
And, you know, you can actually look it up. There's newspaper reports on it, and It's so graphic.
Oh, gosh. Oh, golly. I would like to look it up, yeah. I wonder if she's cussing the whole way. Is your head still alive when you roll?
Yeah.
No, I don't know. Yeah, like, Was she looking at the people as she was flipping around with her head? I don't know.
Oh, my gosh. That's terrible. That is so terrible.
It is.
But funny it anyway, is. I guess.
Sounds like her last meal needed to be Weight Watchers.
Yeah.
Right? She should have went on a fast about a week before that hanging, huh? They do have the rope that she was hung with in the Pinal Museum.
Oh, wow.
They do have the electric chair in that museum as well. So that's kind of a cool little tour to do through that town, but tons and tons of history in that place. And as you can imagine, none of it is good. there's no happy inmates. There's no happy execution. So there's a lot of bad juju. I mean, once the gates close behind you, you just feel like a heaviness, and it's just, you can feel it. There's nobody that can deny, even people that, you know, say, oh, we don't believe in this. Once they work there, they change their mind. And there's places that they'll refuse to post. And that building was one of them.
Gosh, you're so brave.
What's that?
I said, you're so brave. I don't think I could do it.
It's not for everybody. Yeah. And it's nice to be out of it. So after 11 years, it's very nice to not work in that environment anymore.
Yeah, I'm glad you don't have to.
Me too. Mm. Much happier now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Tracy's sister did that for a while.
Uh-huh. Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she weighs every bit of 90 pounds. And.
Oh, my God.
I know. I'm like, I said, you wouldn't be able to, you know, overtake anybody. And she said she's actually got in between a couple of, you know, prisoners and stuff, and I'm like, you're crazy. So, but she finally quit because it just got to be too much for her. But
oh, she's silly for getting in between them. I never get in between them. I'd say, go ahead.
I know you're crazy.
We'll deal with you in a minute when I get some other people over here.
Oh yeah, yeah. She, I don't know. I just kept nagging at her. So just, you know, it's not worth it. Find another job. And she finally ended up quitting. So
plus, I think the difference was she worked for like a smaller type. Jail situation. It wasn't like a state penitentiary where you had all the hardened criminals and stuff. It was a smaller setup. So not that that yeah. makes a difference because it's still just as dangerous, but I mean, it is a different level.
That's true. There was a huge difference between me working at the state penitentiary and then working on the reservation. Like that cell block that I was talking about, I had 204 inmates in that cell block.
Dang,
5 stories. So you can imagine the variables that can happen with 204 people on, you know, they're your responsibility. At the reservation, I would have about 30. Hmm. So that's a huge difference.
Yeah, definitely.
See, I've never worked in a jail or a prison, but I did hang out in Monopoly jail one time with a thimble and an iron.
God, I hate when that happens. Everybody just keeps passing you by, collecting $200, and you don't.
That's so
it's not
weird.
Fair.
Well, I guess we need to wrap this up since my corny jokes aren't getting laughed at on this end.
I know, I just gave this look like, really?
She's like, you went there. You went there, Jerry.
That's what he does when he's, like, if he gets tired and cranky, you know.
Is Ninja looking at you stupid too?
Ninja always looks like
Yeah, he doesn't know. He doesn't know any different.
Don't bet on it.
Well, my older daughter is sitting here. She loves you guys. So
aww.
Say hi, Chloe.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Chloe. How are you?
I'm pretty great. I'm cracking up over here.
She has got to have the life experience of me coming home and telling her all these stories.
Uh-huh.
And so she's always enjoyed them.
Oh, I'm sure.
Well, I've been trying to get your mom to come on for like 6 months now. And I keep using you as a pawn. I keep saying, you could be a hero to your daughter if you'd just come on.
he really has.
I've been telling her to go on. Like, I've tried to encourage her. It's about time.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, you know I'm stubborn.
It's true.
I have to be in the mood to tell stories and, yeah. You know.
Well, thank both of you young ladies for listening to the show.
We appreciate it. We appreciate it so much.
My little one listens too, but only after I preview the show. I'm like, oh, yep, this story's a little bit too hairy for her. Okay. But she does. She literally, she will get in the car because we have a long drive to school in the morning for her. She goes to school in a different city. So it's about 30 minutes. And she asks every morning, Mama, can we listen to Hillbilly Horror Stories? And I'm like, okay.
That's so sweet.
Let me pick one I've already listened to.
Well, that's the ultimate compliment. So we appreciate that.
She loves you guys.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you guys so much.
We get such a big thrill when people talk like it. There was another one of our listeners who actually, she's got her own podcast, KD from Southern Grimoire. She said that they listen like when it's bath time. And she said her youngest kid actually loves the theme song and dances to it.
Oh, that's cute.
That is cute.
So, aww. which is oddly enough, she's going to be on this episode too. So,
cool.
When you hear your episode, you'll get to hear hers too. All right, Kate, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a long time coming, and I'm glad we finally got the time worked out.
All right. Thank you, Jerry.
We'll talk to
you
soon.
Thank you, Tracy. We love you guys. Keep up the good work.
We love you guys too.
Well, that sure was a fun story. Nothing about having a hanging go wrong and a lady's head popping off because she weighs too much and rolling through the middle of the crowd.
Look, I can't even say anything because I'm about to lose it.
What?
That's terrible. I feel so terrible laughing about that. I just hear and her looking like she's rolling down the aisle and be like, damn, man, my hip popped off. And she's like looking at all these people as she's going by.
I wonder if they were playing Rats Round and Round at the time that was happening.
Oh, my gosh. That is a terrible story. It really is a terrible story. But it's just not a good image that you can't help it.
And you got that guy that's putting up the blanket so he can't see the woman yelling at him and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I bet there's a lot of that stuff. Of course, we got some friends that do the correction stuff. Mm-hmm. And I bet they got some stories. I need to check with Nick and Rob from Ohio, because they both have worked corrections, and I wonder if they've had any experiences like that.
I don't know, but all I can say is she's brave.
Because
I could never in a million years, I don't think I could handle it.
Kevin Cummings, who's a good friend of the show, he actually went on to Phil Holmes is Scared and told his story that he has where he was touched by Michael Jackson. I mean, a ghost. Michael Jackson could be a ghost. Well, it was a prisoner, though. Anyway, he told that story, and then Steve Asher, of course, has written a book on all the haunted prison stuff. So, I mean, yeah, it's a lot of that stuff that goes on, and Kate's got a bunch more stories that we're going to have her come on and tell from where she was on a Native American reservation.
I know, and she said this one is like the bomb diggity, so I'm excited to hear that.
But we have a show coming up. I've been saying this for about 7 years now, but there's a show coming up that's going to be nothing but law enforcement telling their paranormal stories.
Oh, my gosh.
And she's going to be part of that show. So that's what we saved some of these
for. Yeah. I can't even imagine what we're going to hear. Do I sound like a man?
Yeah.
I do.
I do too, though.
I know. We're both like
fighting codes.
Yeah. Okay.
Which, and I have to officiate a wedding tomorrow. So I'm hoping I can actually speak and clear nose. I might have to get some of that stuff and put under my nose like they use for autopsies so the smell doesn't get to them. So it kind of might open you up. Or I'll just use Vicks.
Oh my God, what is wrong with you?
Nothing, but
that is gross.
I get Ashley. She works at the crematorium.
No, we won't.
Ashley told me a cool story the other day, but I'm going to let her tell it on the show. That's something that happened at the crematorium.
Oh my gosh.
That was
creepy.
And she said she couldn't wait to write and tell me about it.
Oh my gosh.
And she told me next time that she comes on the show, her intro should be, I'm burning for you.
Stop it.
Hey, that was her joke, not mine.
Oh my gosh. You guys are so demented. My land.
So, the next story we're going to cover, Marianne from Washington has a very unique story, something that nobody else has sent us. And it has to do with her being able to film part of a voodoo ritual in Haiti. And something that happened to her, and we'll let her talk about it. So this is Marianne from Washington. Guys, we are joined on the line by a very unique storyteller This is Marianne from Washington, and what I like about her story is she wrote something that nobody else has ever written us, and it was the fact that she got to sit in and actually watch a voodoo ceremony in Haiti, and I thought it was a really cool story, and I asked her if she would come on and tell the story, and thank you so much for that, Marianne, for writing and coming on to tell it.
Well, thank you. Thank you for asking me to come aboard and be one of your listener stories. It was back in 2010, and I had been volunteering about two or three times a year as a videographer to go on different medical missions with different doctors from the Seattle area. And we would be going to Guatemala mostly, and then they asked me to go to Haiti. And so anyway, we went to Haiti, and there was probably about 10 of us from Washington State that went, and there was a couple people from California also that joined us, and we flew into Cape Haitien, and that is north of, the main city there in Haiti, and it's a little bit smaller area. And remember that there was an earthquake there in 2009, so this had been about a year after the earthquake. And there was so much loss and devastation there. And so they needed a lot of medical care. And so we were going to go to all the different hospitals and possibly do some visits, at-home visits also. And my job as a videographer was to tell the story of how the people were feeling, what did they look like, what kind of home did they have, what did they lose, and all that kind of stuff. So we had been working for about 5 days, and our days are like 12 to 14 hour days. And as a volunteer, it's such an inspiration to be able to go and help people. They welcome you so much. And being in Haiti, it can be very dangerous there. When we went walking by ourselves, let's say for lunch, we'd always have some kind of security guard with us and everything. But I still felt very comfortable there. So we had one day off, and that was a Sunday. And so a van picked us up, and there was about 12 of us that went by van. And we did have an interpreter with us because we speak French Creole there. And I know Spanish, but I do not know French Creole. So we went on about an hour and 15-minute drive to this beautiful citadel, La Fiere. It's a fortress that is about an hour and 15 minutes from Cape Haitien. And we had to ride on donkeys up to the top of the citadel, the big forest fortress. And it was really amazing and beautiful and everything. And then as we were coming home, I had talked to the interpreter, and I had said, oh, it would be so neat to, I asked him about a voodoo ceremony because I've always been interested in various different religions and different ceremonies that are possibly odd or bizarre, but very interesting to me. And he had said that sometimes on Sundays, they can be driving out in the country and there'll be some kind of sign like something's going on. And sure enough, right before we got back to Cape Haitien, there was, wasn't even really a sign to us, but it was a sign that he recognized. And he asked the driver if we could pull over and ask me. And I said, I want to go and everything. And there was four people did not want to go into the voodoo ceremony. They were too scared, or I don't know, they just did not want to go in there. And there was eight of us that was very excited to go in. And so as we walked into this not a very nice home, but in the backyard, we start hearing about drum beats and lots of drum beats. And it was very, very kind of exciting, the drum beats, as we were walking in the backyard. And I'm one of the first people to go in, and I have my camera going too, and it's a kind of a a small, really nice video camera, so it's not a big, huge one or anything, so I don't want to ever feel intrusive there. And so I just had it running the whole time, and as we walked in the backyard, we saw two separate people that were buried, not deep or anything, maybe a foot in the ground, and they had white paint on their faces, and their eyes were closed, and they had all these candles, and the candles even looked, were from Coke bottles, and just kind of an odd-looking array of candles that are around them, and they were separated in the ground with their eyes closed, and I think the ceremony had already started, but they welcomed us in. There was no problem. She was happy, and the lady that was doing this, she's called a mambo, and she's quite a large lady, and she had a little cigarette or a little cigar in her mouth, and it was basically, I thought was going to burn her mouth. It was so short. And she had a little bottle of rum in her hand, a glass bottle of rum. So you can take the picture and you could see she was very sweaty and because she'd been dancing around in a circle and everything around these people. And I could even see where she'd had a gunshot in her shoulder or something. And I noticed that more later after I brought the video home. And so the interpreter said something to her like, are we welcome to come in and can I take pictures and that kind of thing? And she said, oh, yeah, go ahead. You know, I don't understand her, but you could tell by her hand gestures, yeah, go ahead, go in. And so we all sat kind of, actually we stood. There were probably 20, 25 people there. And two people on the ground, and they were, I guess it was a healing ceremony. We didn't know really what it was until afterwards, but we actually thought the people were dead in the ground. There were four doctors with us that went in the voodoo ceremony, and they even thought they were dead, too. So anyway, she did a lot of dancing for about 5 or 10 minutes, and then we were about ready to go because we didn't want to interrupt too much. And then suddenly she pointed to me, and I was thinking it was because of the camera that I had because I was very close to her, probably with only 2 feet away. And she was kind of gyrating and all that kind of stuff. And then she started saying these words to me, and I didn't know what she was saying, but I did have the video up, the words and everything. And so she started saying something, and then the interpreter told me, this is what she's saying to you. She says, one of your sons is working with you now. And I said, what? You know, and she says, one of your sons is working with you now. And I just like, I went, oh my God, you know, it was, I couldn't believe it. I started getting chills and everything. And with a group of people, of the 12 people that I was with, people really didn't know me personally that much. They didn't know my life or anything like that. And so when she said, one of your sons is working with you now, it really hit home to me. And so I motioned to her and I said, yeah, must be, or something like that. And I just almost, I started kind of tearing up and that kind of thing. And then I went to one of my friends, one of the ladies that I was with, and I told her, you know, what they said and everything. And then I told her what had happened. And anyway, it was just, it was very, very quite emotional for me and everything. And so we all kind of felt like it was time for us to leave. And as we were walking out, and I had my video camera always running, we suddenly see one of the guys' eyes move, you know, that were in the ground. And so they were alive, but we thought they were dead. And we were probably in there for 20 minutes. Not a long time, but it was incredible. And I have the soundtrack of the music. It's very, very, very nice. So that's kind of what happened to me with a voodoo ceremony. And I guess what I need to do is tell you about what she said to me, one of your sons is working with you now. Now, I don't know how she knew that I have two sons, but my one son died. He had died about 4 years before me coming there in 2006, and he died of a heroin overdose at age 27 in Seattle. And I vowed after he passed away that I would always incorporate my feelings and thoughts and with my job. I actually went back to school and studied filmmaking and some more stuff because I was going to create this business. And I always felt that my son gave me the spirit to want to be a volunteer to help people. And so that was, I just, no one knew anything about me. And how did that Mambo know exactly what one of my sons is working with you? And then she also, I guess, said, and he's okay and don't worry about him. And if anyone out there speaks French Creole, I could certainly send you the audio version of it because it's really incredible. I'll never forget this. So anyway, it's hard when you lose a child. And he had 7 or 8 years of drug abuse and some mental illness and everything. So it kind of was a dual diagnosis. And when you lose one of your children, you're always wondering, will you ever see him? That's why I've been more interested in the paranormal, because I wonder if I'm ever going to see my son. And but this is the one time that I felt maybe she knew.
Well, that's such an awesome story, Marianne, because I've stated time and time again that my favorite stories always involved a loved one reaching out to give you that sense, somewhat of a sense of closure, but more a sense of knowing for sure that they're okay. And it sounds like that probably was a huge help to you.
It was. And I had while my son was going through this illness, and drug addiction and everything, I'd been working for hospice for about 8 years. And so I had always met the people that I helped get on hospice and their stories of their families and some of the stories that they didn't want their children to know that they were dying and everything. And I had this one video of my son that said, I only had one little video that I had caught him saying maybe a year before he passed, that he loved me, and I thought video was so important to have video. And so that's why I went back to school, and when I went back to school, I was able to volunteer and go on this trip to Haiti, and then I was able to meet the Mambo. So it was incredible. So
I know now you're retired. Do you get a chance to use much film or do anything with that nowadays?
Well, I did film the hurricane that we were in. I was actually in Puerto Rico, and I filmed that. And I've done some other different things, too, but not as much as I want to. But I have done probably 5 or 6 videos of fundraising for different places in Guatemala. And we went back to Haiti, too, but we were in the main town of Haiti. And so I wasn't back at Cape Haitian. So I would love to go back to see that lady again, because I did put a video of my part of my experience of going to this voodoo ceremony and the music on YouTube. And so there's been, I haven't told anyone about it, but people have found it online. So it's been pretty interesting. So
Would you be okay if we posted that? You sent a link to it for me to watch, but would that be something you'd be okay if we posted on our page, or would you rather keep that more private?
Well, you can post it if you like. The thing is, it will not be of her words. I cut all that out. Basically, the one that I sent you was a short video, 5 minutes of a montage of some of the patients that we helped, and then also some of the voodoo stuff. So certainly, there's not a problem there.
No, I think people, once they hear this, they'll be curious, and it'd be cool for them to be able to go look, and some of what you were saying will make a little more sense as they see some of that stuff. So I think it'd be cool.
And if they see the lady on the video, you can just, it's the way that she has her eyes and the way she looks, it's really pretty interesting. And the way that she's drinking her rum and has a cigarette and the bullet hole. Pretty interesting.
Marianne, thank you so much for coming on and tell the story.
You're welcome.
I'm sorry that the story has such tragic links to it, but it was an awesome story, and I'm glad I got to hear it.
Thank you very much. You're the first person I've shared this with.
Well,
thank you.
We feel very privileged, and I know the Patreon listeners will be so excited that you felt the need to share with us, and they get to be a part of something that not a lot of people got to be a part of. So thank you.
Thank you. All right. Say hi to Tracy.
I will. Sorry she wasn't up here. She's got keeping the dog quiet.
All right. Okay. Take care.
Thank you, Marianne. Bye-bye. So that's kind of a really sad story with the fact that of her losing her son and everything that she must have went through for that.
Right.
But at the same time, it's kind of a happy ending.
Yeah.
Knowing that maybe you get that a little bit of closure, I guess, that maybe the best you can have from losing a child.
Yes.
And at least knowing that, you know, he's okay.
Yeah. And that she's still trying to follow her dream and he's right beside her.
Yeah. So that's
good.
We appreciate Marianne telling her story.
Thank you.
It's got to be really hard to talk about something as personal as that. And she told me, I can't remember if it was on the recording or afterwards, but she said she's never shared that with anybody.
Really?
So,
thank you for sharing that with us, Marianne.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Well, we're going to transition from a situation of somebody losing their son to somebody who had a near-death experience.
Okay.
And this is kind of a unique story in the fact that Christy likes to share the fact that her near-death experience is unlike any of the other ones she's ever heard about. No bright lights or
right.
No white lights, no any of that. And it really is a unique story as you hear it. But then she also touches on a video that she shot while she was in the hospital. It had one of those motion-activated sinks, so you have to get up to it. And she's like, she would go up to it and she'd have to wave her arms frantically and stuff just to even get the thing to come on. And as soon as it would come on, it would go off too soon. But she was laying in the bed, the only one there, and it would just randomly come on as if something was setting it off that she couldn't see. And she's got some video of it, and she actually posted it on our Facebook page.
Oh, cool.
I think it was on the group page, though. So if you're not a group member, join the Hillbilly Horror Stories group and you can see some cool stuff. And I give you a chance to vote on, like, questions. Most of the questions that I asked Johnny L. Tenney and Adam Berry the other night came from you guys. So if we give you a chance to do some things that other people don't get to chime in on, so be a part of the group. But this is Christy's story, and I think you're going to find it very entertaining. All right, I'm joined on the phone from one of our Texas listeners, Christy from Texas. Christy, thanks for coming on with us tonight.
Thank you.
Now, you wrote me back and forth a little bit in the Facebook group the other day. Thanks for being part of the group, by the way.
Of course. I love it. It's super fun.
And your story, you wrote us just right out on the group and said that you had a near-death experience that didn't involve a white light. And that always fascinates me, because if you listen to the last episode with John E.L. Tenney, we actually talked a little bit about that, so I don't know if that's what prompted you to
write. That is.
It is. Good. Okay, so you live in Texas. How old are you?
32.
How long ago did this incident happen?
Oh, sweet Jesus. It happened in 2011, September of 2011.
Okay, so you're looking about 5, 6 years ago, 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to take up all of your time because you know the story and I don't. So give us a little bit of background on what happened and how one thing led to another and where we're at today on it.
Okay. I have chronic migraines, and so I had scheduled an appointment with this new neurologist, and it had taken months to have that appointment. Well, the night before that appointment, I came home from work, and I was really, really sick and just, like, horrible stomach pains. And I have I've dealt with, like, stomach ulcers before, so it was kind of like that kind of pain, but, like, intensified. And I couldn't lay down, sit down, and it didn't matter how I was. It was just excruciating pain. So I just went to bed. And that next morning, the morning of my doctor's appointment, didn't need to go to work or anywhere, but I couldn't even see straight. I was in so much pain, and, like, literally my vision was blurry. I mean, my brain was foggy, everything, but I'll be darned, I was going to make it to my doctor's appointment. I literally don't remember getting in my car. I don't remember driving to the hospital where my doctor's appointment was, and I got off the hospital of the, I mean, I got off the elevator at the parking garage, and I walked in the hospital. And I sat on a bench and I texted my fiance and I said, I literally don't think I can make it to the elevator. I think I'm going to pass out. And, you know, he laughed at me and just thought I was being dramatic and told him to call him after my appointment. So I remember getting on the elevator. I remembered that. And then somebody was tapping my arm and asking if I was Christy Bertrand, which was my name then. And I said yes, and she told me that I missed my appointment, and I got a little hysterical and cried because I had been waiting for it. And she told me that wasn't important because I had no color to my skin and was, like, cold and sweaty. And so they took me to the emergency room, and my mom's a little dramatic, so I didn't want her there. So I called my fiance at the time, and he told me it was probably just a migraine, I'd be fine. Well, my heart rate was like 125, 130, so they admitted me. Well, then it kept getting higher. I don't really remember how high it got, but they gave me a shot to make sure I didn't get a blood clot. My fiance had a softball game that night, and he wasn't going to miss it, of course. So by that point, my mom had caught wind, and she was there, of course. And so my mom's there wanting to call everybody to come visit me and, you know, get a priest in there to read me my dying, you know, rites and stuff, because she's dramatic like that. And then next thing I know, I'm like, I'm gonna be sick, you need to let me up. And they kept telling me I needed to stay still, I needed to lay down. And I stand up and just literally threw up half the blood in my body and was sliding in it and slipping in it. It was like something out of a horror scene, like straight out of Carrie. And they were, like, trying to put a GI scope, like, down my throat while I was still not knocked out yet. And I was, like, swinging at them, getting crazy. So then I don't remember anything for, like, a few days. They let my fiance stay in the room with me because I was so out of it. And I had to get 4 units of blood, and I was in ICU for 4 days. And the doctors would, like, come out and tell my parents stuff. And my dad lives 4 hours away, so he was, like, hauling butt to get there. And the doctors came out, and my parents were asking if I was talking, what I was saying and stuff. And whenever I left the hospital, because I was already emotional there, every time I woke up, my fiance had to, like, calm me down and tell me where I was, what was going on, because I had lost so much blood that I was, like, really, really out of it. And at one point, the doctor told my parents and my fiance that I was telling them I needed to get out of there because I needed to go to my pawpaw's birthday party. And my dad, who doesn't cry very easily, his eyes tear up, and he said, Dad's birthday's this week. And my pawpaw died my junior year of high school. And so when I got home, my husband had told me that, and I was like, that's crazy. And, like, I didn't even remember how I had gotten to the hospital that day. Like, it was just all really weird. Well, then a few years later, I was just a regular night. I was sleeping, and then in the middle of the night, I woke up, like, literally gasping for air, and I'm sorry. It just dawned on me that I say literally, like, every other word. I'm going to work on that.
That's okay. I say actually 30 times a show.
I know. But my husband, it gets so mad about that. He's like, literally, literally? And I'm like, literally. Oh, it's a bad habit. And when you realize you're being recorded, you're like, yeah, that's a problem. Anyways, I woke up, like, gasping for air from this really real dream I was having. In this dream, I'm sleeping, and my pawpaw wakes me up and extends his hand, and I give him mine. And growing up, we always went on walks. So we would walk around the whole town. Like, if he decided I needed a new swing for the swing set, we would, like, walk to the hardware store, like, give my grandma a heart attack. But he, like, extended his hand, and we went on a walk, and it just felt very normal. Like, things were blurry. Like, it was like we were walking. It's like how sometimes photographers take a picture, and, like, you're in focus, and everything else is blurry. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like that, and we talked. I just, like, caught him up, like, to date with, you know, I'm married now, and this is what's going on, and, like, caught him up on pretty much everything that has happened since he's been gone. And we just walked and held hands and talked, and then it was just like he just stopped walking, and he asked me if I was ready, and then I just broke down crying, and I was like, I haven't had kids yet, and I'm not ready, and I just got married and all this stuff. And then he just said, okay, I love you, and he hugged me, and then I woke up, and I just was crying because I looked at my phone, and it was 2 years from the day that I was in the hospital and that happened. And so I called my cousin, who was also his granddaughter, and she's, like, my best friend, and I was crying, and she was crying, and it's just crazy. But I've been in the hospital a lot, and I've had a lot of crazy stuff. I have a video I need to send y'all. It's very dark on my phone, but when I had my son, I had a really crazy pregnancy, and I was in the hospital for a month, and one of the sinks had the sinks that were motion censored. I was in bed watching TV, and one of the sinks, like, turned on and just stayed on, and I was like, okay. But yeah, there was no bright white light, but it was just it seemed very normal, and then it just dawned on me whenever he asked if I was ready, and I was just like, no.
So the dream that you had 2 years mm-hmm. later, is that a memory from what happened that night, or was this two completely different setups?
I think it was a memory from what happened, because the very next day was when Adam said that they were telling I told my doctor I needed to leave, that I needed to go to my pawpaw's birthday. And so I'm guessing that, like, the doctors were trying to wake me up or something whenever I was in that or something.
What do you think the reason would be for that memory to just happen to come back 2 years to the day?
I don't know. Like, I'm very spiritual. I'm very, like, in tune with all that. And I had told my husband several times, like, he didn't, like I said, when I was in the hospital, he didn't tell me anything. And he told me that, and, like, I cried, and I told him, like, I wished that I had remembered being with my pawpaw if I was. And so I think that was, like, my pawpaw's way of, like, giving me that memory.
Oh, now, see, that makes sense. What if he would have told you that your fiance didn't spend all 4 days in the hospital and went to another softball game? Would you have been mad?
Believe me, I'm pretty sure he did. That wouldn't shock me at all. But I say that a lot, and my cousin's like, you know, thinks I'm the weird cemetery girl because I take my 2-year-old to the cemetery to see him, and he was a veteran, and so he's got a flag there, and so my son will get there, and he'll be like, Papa, is this your flag? Aww. But, like, my cousin won't take her kids, and she's like, that's just weird. And I'm like, well, he's only going to have memories and that, so. And I got my pawpaw's name added to, like, a veteran memorial there, so I take my son to that. But it's like, that's all, you know, he's got. So, yeah, I'm the weird cemetery girl in my family, so what are you going to do?
But you know, I like cemeteries. I know that sounds crazy, but I love the really old ones, and I love, like, my mom is buried, oddly enough, very similar to Tracy's mom. My mom is in the middle of the country, down by Mammoth Cave, matter of fact. She's in a little town called Horse Cave, which is, I don't know, 20 minutes from Mammoth Cave. Everybody knows where Mammoth Cave, or has heard of Mammoth Cave, but she's about 20 miles, and there's this little church that sits up on a hill. You gotta go back these windy little road. You go up on the very top of the hill. There's a little church, and I mean, I'm talking probably doesn't seat 20 people. Little outhouse, and a little picnic area, you know, where they would have their little gatherings and stuff. And there's the cemetery right there. There's probably not 50 people in it. And
oh, I love that.
Yeah, and it's always windy because it's up on hill. Doesn't matter when you go, the wind's blowing. And Tracy's mom is in a little place called Dry Ridge, Kentucky, which is up, if I don't know how familiar you are in Texas from hearing this, but there was some big news in the last couple of years because they built this giant ark up here that's like a theme park. But, I mean, it's life size of what the ark was supposed to be built to their specifications, and it's literally 10 minutes from there. So there's two huge landmarks right by where both of our parents are. So you got that coincidence, and then her mom is up in this little bitty church. I've been in it a couple of times, but it only seats like maybe 30, 40 people, and it's got a little outhouse and a little place to sit to have your little picnic covered area, and then it's got, you know, the cemetery, and it sits up on a hill. So they're almost at carbon copies of each other, just different cities.
I love that.
Yeah, I do too. It's just something about a little private cemetery and a little church on site that's just, I don't know, it makes it seem, you know, like you're on a little house on a prairie or something.
Right.
So
I love that. My father-in-law wanted to go to Mardi Gras for his 60th birthday, and while they were all getting drunk, I was in cemeteries. And since it was Mardi Gras, a lot of them were closed, and I was sneaking in.
Oh, did you go to St. Louis second?
Mm-hmm. I went to all of them.
Nice.
Yeah, that's what I did when everybody else was drinking.
But we're going to go down because we're going to be at that Potter and Love Podcast Festival in August in New Orleans, and we're going to make it a point on the way down that we're going to take a tour, a ghost tour at night, so we can see Madame Lola Ree's house, and we're going to go to St. Louis too. And then the day before, we're going to go out to the Myrtles Plantation. So we're going to have fun when we go to New Orleans, ghost style.
I've always wanted to go to the Myrtles Plantation. Yep. I would love to go back.
It's on my list.
Not Mardi Gras.
I tried to book a room already for August. Can't do it. Already booked.
At Myrtles?
Yep. So here's what it is. I guess we'll just go visit and call it a day.
Yeah.
Christy, it was so much fun having you on. I'm glad that you decided to share your story with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoy it. Y'all's podcast is my favorite, and I love it.
Well, thank you so much. We love doing it for you guys. So anytime we get any kind of feedback, we got there's a young lady that's going to be on the same show that you are, and she lives out in Arizona, and her daughter loves the show. She's like 13 years old, but she's also got a younger daughter that really likes the show, and we did it last night. We did a little FaceTime video back and forth for a few seconds. And
oh, how cute.
Well, it's funny because this young lady, we have been Facebook friends for years, okay? She didn't listen to podcasts, had no clue, and she started listening to podcasts, and she was listening to Jim Harold's Campfire, and she heard me on there. So even
though I heard you on a Real Ghost Stories Online.
Oh, really? But it was funny because even though we knew each other and have known each other for years, it took her listening to somebody else's show to know we had a show.
Right. So I just thought it was hilarious.
I just thought it was funny. So she told her daughter this morning that she FaceTimed me and Tracy, and she said that her daughter's eyes lit up, and she said she can't tell you one celebrity out there, but she knows who Jerry and Tracy is. And I just thought that
was... Oh, how cute.
Yeah, that's what I said. It was adorable. So,
oh.
those are the things that keep us going.
Yeah, my son's
going
to be really into this. Like, he runs around telling everybody he's a werewolf because he loves Hotel Transylvania. And he will point out ghosts on TV. And we can be watching Walking Dead. And he'll come in here and just watch it. And I'm like, I'm not going to be that parent that, like, traumatizes our kid with Walking Dead. But, yeah, he's two. And he already loves monsters and ghosts and all that. And so I'm like, oh, goodness.
That's awesome. You know, it's funny because we used to take our kids, not Tracy now, because it was before that, but with my first wife, we would take our kids to the movies and see the most god-awful things. I mean, all the Halloween movies and Nightmare on a, but my kids, for some reason, looking back, it probably wasn't the best decision, but they all turned out okay. And, you know, they loved those things even today. And I'll tell you the funniest story, and this actually came up again this weekend. Myself and my kids, every Father's Day, would sit down and watch Creepshow.
Because that's hilarious.
Because there's that one episode in there, if you remember the stories, there's one story in there to where the dad got killed, and he comes back as like a pretty much a rotting corpse, and he's asking about his Father's Day cake. And then he ends up killing the daughter that had him killed, or stepdaughter, whatever it was. So for whatever reason, because of that, it ended up being a Father's Day tradition for us to watch that together. So that's how screwed up my family is.
Oh, I'm the same way. I've been watching all sorts of crazy stuff since I was little, and so I'm like, I'm okay. So it's fun.
All right, dear, I greatly appreciate it. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much.
We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks.
So that was Christy's story, and I thought that was so touching because just like I explained with Marianne's story, I think anytime we get a story that involves a loved one reaching out to you, those are the ones to me that are the most special.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. And I'm almost jealous of that a little bit.
And I could see where that would be the situation. I mean, because anytime you lose somebody, you want so desperately for them to be able to reach out to you, even if it's just that one time to say I'm okay. So, yeah, I could definitely understand that. And you know, being in that situation where I got that, I couldn't imagine my life if I didn't have that. It's literally changed everything, my whole viewpoint on everything. So,
yeah, it's an amazing story.
It was. It was definitely amazing. And I'm going to make sure that I reshare that video. So anybody listen to this now afterward, it'd be easier for them to find the ones you put. It's a little bit dark, but it's... obvious what's going on with the water turning on and stuff.
That's awesome.
All right. So here's our last story of the night. This was definitely a cool story. It's got a little bit of a demonic feel to it. It basically is going to tell you to be careful what you bring in your house. I think that's the moral of the story. This young lady you've heard on our show, in general, you've heard her because we did a promo for her show, Southern Grimoires. And I think her show is really well done, and it fits right in with the type of stuff that we do. So if you get a chance to listen to it, but we're going to talk a little bit about her show in there, and then she's going to tell you a creepy story that happened to her. And I think you'll probably enjoy this story as much as you did the other three that we had on. So let's listen to K.D. Burr. All right. As usual, we like to bring on some of our podcast friends to do some of these episodes. And one of our newest podcast friends is K.D. Burr. And she is host of Southern. Is it Southern Grimoire or Grimoire? I've heard it pronounced both ways. How do you pronounce it?
I pronounce it Southern Grimoire. And that might be just an Oklahoma way to pronounce it. But I think it's fine either way. A lot of my friends pronounce it differently.
It's like Jaguar. Some people say Jaguar, some say Jaguar, some say Jaguar.
Oh, come on now. That was a stretch.
That's not a stretch. That's how...
Jaguar? What the
heck is that? Not in Oklahoma.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, Katie, I absolutely love your show. And you're now part of the Dark Myths Collective, which is how I found out about your show. I know you've had some people that we really love kind of jump in and help give you a boost. Mike Brown from Pleasing Terrors, which most of our listeners will know, has jumped in and been on the bandwagon that caused me to listen. I'm hooked. It's a fantastic show. And you've got top-notch presentation. You got good storytelling. And like I said, we played your promo, a couple of weeks ago on our show. So I love it. I don't know what else to say.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I haven't been doing it very long, so it's been an experience, and having help from, you know, people like you and Mike has made a huge difference.
Well, we're glad to jump in and help any way we can. And like I said, I know it's tough getting started, and we had some good help along the way. And we try to keep helping newcomers as they come along. And like I said, we're glad to have you part of the Dark Myth Collective, because we can always use good, young, talented shows out there. So tell everybody about your show.
So Southern Grimoire is a collection of unsolved crimes, mysteries, legends, and haunted history. So it's a bit of a mix of everything, just spooky, creepy, and strange things that interest me. So I try to do it weekly. Sometimes I fall a little bit behind. Right now we are doing listener request episodes. So that's been really fun to do. I have some very random and interesting topics to cover there. And I will actually be coming out with a new episode in a couple of days.
You do a lot of Oklahoma stuff. And apparently it looks like there's a lot of stories that I was completely unaware of, which is what really cool when people centralize. I know, like Dina Marie with Twisted Philly, when she focuses on Philadelphia and the surrounding areas right there, we get a lot of stories that most of the country are unaware of. And I found the same thing about your show when it comes to Oklahoma.
Oklahoma is very fascinating. I think that the reason there is so much folklore and so much interesting storytelling here is because of our Native American background. My family's Native American, so passing stories down is a huge part of what we do, and probably a huge reason that I love storytelling. When I first started Southern Grimoire, I did focus on Oklahoma. And as I continued to do it and I started to get more listeners from other areas of the country, I had people asking for me to branch out and cover more stories. So I do, but I do like to bring it back to my home state whenever I can. One of my upcoming episodes will have to do with the Girl Scout murders, which is an Oklahoma story as well. And I have been doing a lot of research for that one. My husband is a painter in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and he actually painted for one of the families who unfortunately lost their daughter in the Girl Scout murders. So we have a strange roundabout way that we are connected to that story. So being able to travel my state and see it in a different way, trying to take the stories and present them in a way that will be interesting and relatable to other listeners, has really been fun for me to do.
I can't wait to hear your take on the Girl Scout murders. I've just recently become aware of that story, and it's very sad, to say the least.
It's incredibly sad. And it's sadder still because some people think it was solved and other people think that, you know, the man that they pegged for it was not the right man at all. My mother actually has just an ungodly amount of knowledge on the case. So in addition to researching, I'm also spending a lot of time with her, trying to see what she remembers from that time period and what she knows about the case. That was a huge reason I started Southern Grimoire, was because of my mother and grandmother's stories, because they know so much. They grew up here. They remember a lot of crazy stories, a lot of crazy legends. There's an episode I did about Foss Lake. My mother grew up in that area. My grandmother grew up in that area. And they remember a lot of stories from there that most people my age in Oklahoma don't know anything about. So she's been an incredible resource for all of the Oklahoma-based stories, but this one in particular.
That's what year did that happen? I mean, that was that the 70s? I'm trying to remember.
I believe I have it actually written down somewhere. I feel like it was actually the 60s.
Yeah, I don't. I remember. I just recently became aware of it.
No, so you're right. It was 1977. I've got a stack of notebooks here. No, it was 1977, and they closed down the camp after it happened. But they classified it as solved. The suspect was Gene Leroy Hart. And actually, my family is split down the middle as to whether they think he really was the culprit or not. I don't know that I think that he was, but he was certainly capable.
It's sad. The whole thing's sad.
So what is your favorite story that you've done?
Oh, my goodness. It is really hard for me to choose. I really liked doing, I liked doing the one that I can't even remember the name of it now. I'm not a very well-prepared interview, I guess. I did Unsolved Oklahoma, and that highlighted some cases that obviously are unsolved. Most of them are cold cases. Some of them didn't get a lot of national attention. There's one in particular, I actually am still in contact with the woman's family. Her name was Pastor Carol Daniels, and she was brutally murdered in Ardmore, Oklahoma, and her case has never been solved. And it's one that it's a very strange, very complicated, and you know, interesting in a dark way case. But a lot of people had never heard about it, and unfortunately, there were plenty of opportunities, I feel like, for it to be investigated better and for it to be solved, and it still isn't. So that episode was hard to do, but it was fun from a research standpoint. I don't want people to get the impression that my show is just true crime. Only a few episodes are. I really enjoyed doing my episode about necromancy and reanimation. I did a lot of research on different medical experiments. I did research on the original Dr. Frankenstein. There actually was a Frankenstein castle, and there was a doctor who performed very strange experiments there. That's one of my favorites. Yeah, I learned so much that I had no idea that there was a real Frankenstein castle. I also really liked doing my demons and exorcism episode, just because I'm fascinated by demonology. It scares the crap out of me, to be perfectly honest, but I liked to be scared, so it was fun to research it.
It's very cool.
So you have prepared, I know you've got several stories, actually, but you've got one that stands out a little more because it's got a little bit of, I guess, a demonic story to it, and I thought you would share that with us tonight.
Yes, I would be happy to. It's sort of a cautionary tale, and I do discuss it in detail in my demons and exorcism episode. When I was in college, I was a videographer for a ghost hunting group, so I was very involved in the darker side of life. I'm also a writer, first and foremost. I was a writer before I started doing a podcast. And at the time I was doing ghost hunting, I was gathering information and research for a novel project that I was writing. I decided that since demons scared me the most, I wanted to write a novel about exorcism and about possession, but I wanted to try and do it differently than most. Usually when you're reading books about demons and exorcism or seeing a movie, it's from a Catholic standpoint. I was going to try to step away from that. So I was visiting with some people that were involved in some unsavory things. I bought a lot of very interesting spell books and some rare books on demonology, once again, strictly for research. But I noticed once I brought these books into my house that things started to get strange. I lived with roommates at the time, and one of the strange things that happened, we were all sleeping. It was the dead of night, around 2 or 3 in the morning, and we all woke up at the same time smelling something burning. And it was a very strong smell. We thought the house was on fire. We all met in the living room and searched the whole house, top to bottom, searched the basement. We even went outside to see if someone was burning leaves or was having a bonfire, you know, something. And we could find nothing, but it still smelled it smelled so strongly in the house. We had cats at the time, 2 cats, and they would always sleep in my bedroom. Just no exceptions. They slept with me every night. And it got to where that they would start to avoid my room. They would run past the open doorway. They wouldn't even look in there. If I tried to throw them gently across the threshold into my bedroom, they would immediately start hissing and yowling, hair standing on end. They would run out. They wouldn't even sleep in my room anymore, which is where these books were. All of the typical strange scratching noises, which we just wrote off and said that we had squirrels in our attic. All kinds of strange creaking and groaning sounds that, well, the house is old. You know, we attributed it to everything that we could that wasn't supernatural or paranormal. until one morning. I had very early classes, so I got up early to get ready, as I always did. It was probably about 6 in the morning. I got out of the shower and just standing in my tiny bathroom, all of my hair began to stand on end. I knew that I wasn't alone. It was just the very overwhelming feeling that you're being watched. And more than that, I felt like someone was right next to me, standing right next to me to my right. It was just a very uneasy feeling. So I'm just standing there trying to get my wits about me, trying to figure out what's going on. And a voice speaks to me. It sounds crazy, but it was clear as day. It was the deepest, most guttural, dark-sounding voice I have ever heard. I have never heard anyone, before or since, speak in this kind of voice. And it was a language I didn't understand. It wasn't gibberish. It was spoken very deliberately. I knew that it meant something, but it just, it was one of the darkest sounds I'd ever heard. I felt like I'd been dipped in ice. I was just instantly terrified. I had never been so scared in my life. I was so scared I felt lightheaded. I screamed and I ran from the bathroom. I ran through my house completely stark naked. No care in the world, you know, if my roommates were up, if they were out and about. I wanted to get out of the house. I grabbed my coat. I sat on my porch. I smoked a cigarette. I called my professor and said, I am not going to be there today. I eventually was brave enough to go back in the house and get dressed, but I avoided the house for several days. I ended up calling my ghost hunting group, and they came. They removed the books that I thought were probably to blame. They found safe homes for them. We smudged my house and did a ritual blessing, and I didn't have any encounters with that entity after that. But it has always stuck with me. It has always scared me. And it convinced me in a weird way. It made my faith stronger. A lot of people say that they have a belief in a higher power or their religion because they've had some sort of miracle or some sort of encounter with a higher power. I believe because of the opposite. I feel like if something that dark and terrifying exists, there has to be some sort of light to balance it out.
Yeah, that's. I've had a situation myself to where when I was in high school, I was doing my senior paper, and my senior paper was on Satanism. And me and this young lady we were doing our paper together, we went to the library and we, you know, checked out some books on Satanism and some on witchcraft. And we had all kinds of strange things happen after we bought those books. And of course, I grew up in a haunted house. So bringing those things into a house that was already active probably wasn't the smartest move on my behalf. But, and I'll tell you what's odd, and this has haunted me to this day, and literally I mean this. The library in my hometown would not give me a library card because they say I never brought one of those satanic books back. And I know for a fact that I did. So to this day, and here I am almost 50, I can't get a library card in Louisville, Kentucky because of a book they say I didn't bring back 30 years ago.
That is so strange. I got goosebumps, though. I wonder what happened to that book.
me too. I know I took it up there, but, you know, I don't know. But I just thought it was kind of funny that I've had a similar occurrence from bringing those types of books into my house.
You know, and I feel like it's probably pretty common. I feel like it's very easy to open a door or extend an invitation to something, even if you don't mean to. You have to be very, very careful messing with those kinds of things. And I've been, you know, since that happened to me, I've been a lot more careful.
All I know is when you kept talking about the deepest voice speaking in a language that you didn't quite understand but was deliberate, I just kept having Hillary Clinton pop in my head. And I know that's not correct, but that's the direction that my mind went in.
All right, it was a lot scarier than Hillary Clinton.
Well, Katie, I know you got a bunch more stories, but we're going to have you on our main show really soon, and I want you to save some of those stories for when we get on the main show.
Perfect.
I thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
I can't wait to be able to share this with the listeners out there because they're going to love your story. And, you know, like I've said, if I've said it on the regular show before, if you love this kind of storytelling as they've given tonight and some of the examples you've given, they're going to need to tune in to your podcast because it's very similar storytelling style. And I like I said, I love it, and I think it fits in with the type of listeners that we have. I think they'll enjoy it as well.
Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you. And thank you for having me on. This was a good time.
It's no problem. How can they find you on the internet, and how can they find your podcast?
So you can find my podcast at southerngrimoire.buzzsprout.com, but you can pretty much listen to it anywhere. You can listen to it on iTunes, Pocket Cast, Podcast Addict, your favorite podcast platform. I am on Instagram at southerngrimoire. Or you can follow my Facebook page, which is also the same name, Southern Grimoire.
It's very creative.
Right. I try to keep it like the same across the board, should anybody be interested in finding me.
And for those of you listening that haven't put two and two together, we posted a picture of you the other day wearing one of our tank tops.
Yes, absolutely. I actually had it on earlier today, too.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Before you get off, you said something to me the other night. Did you not say that you listened to the podcast during bath time with your children?
Yes. Yes, I did. I've done it a couple times, and they love the intro. We don't censor their music a heck of a lot, so I have two little boys who are pretty big rap fans.
Nice.
So that's good for them.
I was telling Tracy, I said, yep, she said they know the song and they dance to it.
Oh, that's
and...
so cool.
They love it. I'll try to shoot a video, actually. I'll send it to you.
That would be phenomenal. Katie, thank you so much for coming on the show, and we look forward to, you know, seeing more from your podcast because it's on the verge of exploding. I honestly believe that. So I couldn't be happier for you, and I'm glad that we're kind of getting you from the ground floor up.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Yep, talk to you soon. Bye.
All right, that was K.D. Burr. And anytime we have demonic stories, that's scary.
Oh, absolutely.
And when you think about just bringing something like a book into your house, how mm-hmm. that could invite something in that yeah. you don't plan on. But I don't know. I'm just glad it wasn't me at this time.
Oh, my gosh. That's right. I forgot about that. I know. That's... It's just so weird because you really would never know if something attached to you. So all those bitchy times that I've had, it could have been a demon.
Yeah, I don't think that's the case at all.
Okay, I tried.
Unless that demon's name is a bitch, I don't, you know.
Oh, well, we want to thank you guys for sharing your stories with us, and it's just, it means a lot to us. Y'all take your time out to do that. And they're really great stories. So if anybody else has any stories they want to share, just get a hold of us and we'll make it happen.
And thank you so much for putting up with our sniffles and
oh, yeah, sorry.
Snorting and partial mouth vomits.
But we're all family here, so it's okay, right?
It's all out of love.
It is.
We'd rather do this sick than to not do it at all. So.
That's true.
You may not feel that way, but that's
well,
the way.
I do. It's been good.
A ninja is, he's gassy.
He's sick too, actually. He's got a runny nose.
Yeah, he's got a runny nose, and he keeps licking on Tracy's leg, and it's disgusting. And then that's not helping me because I look at it, and then it makes me want to have more mouth vomit.
No, so you're just jealous.
Either way, we love you guys, and we will see you very soon. And thank you so much for the money that you spend on us every month. It helps us and means more than you will ever realize. If nothing else, it keeps us humble. And we love doing these things for you to try to at least repay you back in some small way.
Yes, we do appreciate you guys and hope you guys have a wonderful Easter.
We'll see you soon.
Bye.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.